I guess he was using the phone that was meant for the fake emergencies.
That must be it. Okay. We have a couple of news items this week. I don't know if you saw the Saturday Times, but the headline on the front page of the Saturday Times was "Accord Reached for Limiting Smut on the Internet." Do you hear about this one?
No.
Compromise at Capitol curbs opponents give ground to a relentless campaign for bill requiring them. Bowing to a seemingly unstoppable push in Congress to keep sexual material off the Internet, a coalition of commercial online services and some civil liberties groups agreed today, as of December 1st, to accept a number of restrictions they had opposed a few months ago. The move comes just a few days before a House Senate Conference Committee is expected to debate a measure that would impose fines of up to $100,000 and prison sentences on people who knowingly transmit pornography or material deemed filthy, lewd, or indecent. Basically, it looks like the Exxon bill is becoming closer to reality because certain civil liberties groups and senators and representatives and all those nice people are starting to cave in on it. So that's something that's very bad news, I think. They say that it affords more of a protection for those internet providers that actually try to notify adults that obscene material might be floating by, or to give them ways of restricting it. But in the end, as far as what it does to us people that use the net on a regular basis, then that's something that's rather, ominous, I think.
Well, I would think that civil liberties groups would be the ones defending people's right to trade this information, or these pictures or whatever.
That's true. I mean, they really should be taking this one down to the wire, I think. Unfortunately, I don't see very much of that, as far as that kind of strong reaction to censorship. I don't know. In some way, fighting censorship seems to be bad to do these days. People seem to feel guilty about doing it, and I think it's we should be exactly the opposite. If they're able to go through with this particular bill and make things more restrictive, what's going to wind up being, there'll be like a rating system on everything that gets sent over the net. In other words, something of a sexual nature will have to have this big S next to it or something that will rate it. And certain systems will say, okay, well, we don't accept any S content. And that's what we're moving towards, where everything has to be defined in some way. So that way you can easily weed it out, but you can also easily find everybody that is dealing with that kind of material as well, and perhaps weed them out.
Well, I would expect our friends at AOL would probably be one of the first services to trial something like that.
That's true. It's been an interesting week for AOL, hasn't it?
Yeah, actually it has.
What's been going on with them?
Recently I heard that AOL decided that the word breast was to be banned everywhere on AOL.
Well, it's about time. You know, I've been hearing that word everywhere. I hear it in the street now. I hear it on TV and the radio. It's about time somebody stood up and took a stand. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm taking the wrong side, I'm told. That's bad. What they did was bad, wasn't it?
Yeah. In fact, they didn't consider the American Breast Cancer Society, who had the word removed from their very title. And there was a rather large ruckus raised for understandably, for obvious reasons.
Right. Now, when they say they banned the word, how did they ban the word?
From what I understood from the news report, it sounded like they went through their entire service and censored the very word itself so that it was not visible.
Mm-hmm. In public forums, they don't do this for private mail, do they? Can they?
That's a good question. That wasn't actually addressed. Mm-hmm. I don't know if they actually went into people's mail and banned the word.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm assuming at least that this was in public forums, yeah.
Right. Well, that's so they reversed themselves.
Yeah, actually, there was enough complaints that they decided to reverse this. But at the same time, they refused to disclose what all their supposed censored words are.
Mm.
This list is not publicly available. But you can be rest assured that if you hit upon one of these words, they'll swoop down on you, the AOL police.
Well, if there are any AOL insiders out there that have access to these lists, please send them to us, because we'd be very happy to find out just what's going on. There's several ways you can do this, several ways you can leak us information that deserves to be public. One is by sending it to us at the magazine, which is 2600 P.O. Box 752, Middle Island, New York, 11953. Another way is to send it to us here at the radio station, WBAI. Program is Off the Hook. The address is 505 8th Avenue, New York, New York, 10018. Or if you want to use an electronic way of doing it, there's a couple of options. You can email us. My email is emmanuel@2600.com. Fibers is fiber@2600.com. And you can fax us, 516-474-2677. So there's all kinds of ways to get information out, if in fact that's what you want to do. Speaking of important information, we have won our fight against PSI, which we mentioned last week. Now, of course, the thing there is that PSI does not yet know that we have won. But I don't want to go into the details here, but let me just suffice to say that when they are presented with what we have, their only recourse will be to back down and not try to charge us for a year of non-internet access when we were pretty much led there on false pretenses, referring to the problems we had with ISDN, where they suddenly announced that they weren't going to support data over voice, which is something that's pretty commonly used. A lot of people use that particular way of avoiding the penny a minute surcharge. It wasn't revealed to us until after we had already signed up, and then they tried to hold us to a one-year contract. Well, I have a feeling next week at this time we can say officially that that this is over. And if for whatever reason they decide to pursue this, it's going to be really, really interesting, because then we'll just have to go public with the kinds of things that we have. And that's always fun to do. Anything else, Fiber?
Yeah, actually, someone sent me a piece of an interesting piece of email pointing to their website, which they said was fairly new. Mm-hmm. And the person was apparently a consultant that looks for bugs, for wiretaps and so on.
Uh-huh.
And they recently set up a website, and it's at www.t, as in Tom, S as in Sam, cm.com. That's Technical Surveillance Countermeasures is the name of the company. And what's interesting about this website is for the first time, it seems to actually demystify bugs and what's actually done to detect these types of devices. And it seemed really informative in the way of providing, say, for example, spectral analyses, if you actually had the apparatus to search for such things. And actually, we've searched for bugs, haven't we, when we've been in hotels, things of that nature?
Yes, we have searched for all kinds of things.
We've done sweeps. This is actually, with a spectral analyzer, you can actually see, they actually have pictures of what you would see on the screen of the particular tool.
Mm-hmm.
And they have pictures for various types of bugs. They also have pictures of the bugs themselves, the most commonly used bugs, what frequencies are most common to be used. And all in all, I thought it was a rather informative website. And it also has links to various places within the government, like the NSA and the CIA and so on. It has links to their websites as well.
And what is that address?
It was www.tscm, as in Technical Surveillance Countermeasures.com.
Okay. All right, that's a very interesting place to visit, I think. Lots of cool websites are out there. Here's something that I think is good news, too. The U.S. Government Printing Office has announced free use of its award-winning GPO Access online service. Actually, I just realized I'm reading a U.S. government press release, which is why it sounds so nice. But beginning on December 1st, all Internet and dial-in users can now receive electronically at no charge the Congressional Record, Federal Register, Congressional Bills, and a growing list of important government documents on the same day of publication. What do you think about that?
Wow.
We believe the public should have timely access to vital information about the activities of their government without charge, says head of the GPO, public printer Michael F. DiMario. I guess if he's a public printer, he's got a lot less public printing to do now if it's on the net, right?
Yeah, really.
He doesn't have to crank up the old press machine there. But that's actually a very good development. He says the service is made possible through the congressional funding of the Federal Depository Library Program at a time when more and more citizens are receiving their information by computer. Until now, GPO access has been free only to users on site in some 600 of the nation's nearly 1,400 federal depository libraries, and to remote users connecting through over 20 depository library gateways. It was available to others on a subscription basis for a low fee. Under the new program, the fee has been dropped, and refunds of unused portions will be sent to current subscribers. Now, here's how you get through. Website, and Fiber, perhaps you could do this live as we're talking.
Yeah, actually, you want me to get on the net?
Yeah, get on the net.
Okay.
Get your finger on the pulse of the net there. That way we can, we're covering all bases. Okay, now, if you wanted to access this by the web, the web address would be www.access.gpo.gov/SU_DOCS. I guess that would get you everything there. Internet users can telnet to swais.access.gpo.gov and then log in as guest. And dial-in users can use a modem to call 202-512-1661. You type SWAIS and then log in as guest. So are you on?
Robin? I'm actually opening up Netscape as we speak.
Okay, I'll have to give you that address again as soon as you got Netscape open there.
Okay, shoot.
All right. That's www.access.gpo.gov/SU_docs, D-O-C-S.
Here we go.
Okay, you're connected.
Our finger is on the pulse.
All right.
Welcome to the Superintendent of Documents homepage on the U.S. Government Printing Office website.
Well, there you go.
The pathway to federal government information.
Wow.
And they have this nice catchy little graphic on top. It says, Keep America Informed. And it has a really Art Nouveau picture of the flag.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Our flag.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
our
good.
Flag currently. I'm sure as soon as they make their own flag, that'll be there.
Uh-huh. Well, that's good. Now, how many different choices do you have? What can you do from
there? We have, as a first choice, electronic information, online, on-demand, and locator services. And it says, search the full text of the Federal Register, congressional record, congressional bills, and other federal government information online via GPO access. Information available for free public use in federal depository libraries. Identify federal government information available at or through any of 1,400 federal depository libraries. Wasn't JFK assassinated, our favorite assassin actually in a depository?
A book depository.
Right. You think, was it a federal one?
No, I don't think it was federal. Was it federal? The state, right? Yeah, it was the state of Texas book depository.
Ah, okay.
Yeah. Book depositories are strange places. We don't know nearly enough about them.
Yeah, but they seem to be favorite places to snipe people.
Well, yeah, at least in one particular instance. So, it looks like a good site then, eh?
Yeah, it looks like it has the potential to be informative. Oh, wait a second. I knew they would sneak something in here for money. Look at this.
Uh-oh.
Information for sale by the Superintendent of Documents.
What's he selling?
Purchase books, maps, posters, periodicals, and electronic information products from numerous federal agencies.
That sounds kind of sly there. What kind of electronic, what are they talking about there?
It says, find the nearest U.S. government bookstore or connect to the electronic consumer information catalog.
Well, you can get the Federal Register, right?
That's what it says.
Let's go to the Federal Register. What date do they have? Do they have today's Federal Register or is it backlogged?
Well, let's go there right now and find out.
Okay. So that's the kind of thing that that people are interested in, seeing what the federal government did today.
Yeah.
And figuring out how we can fix it tomorrow.
Let's see. Okay. We're presented with some choices. Choices are always good. We have a bunch of choices. Connection to the online databases, description of the online databases, access methods for online databases, free public access through a federal depository library gateway, free public access on site.
I think it's that federal depository thing you want.
Yeah, let's try that.
By the way, we should point out that Fiber is connecting to the web on the same phone line that he's speaking on using the wonders of ISDN.
The wonders of ISDN, yes.
And you're connecting data over voice at 56K.
Yes, I am.
56K, right?
Right.
If I were to hang up now, your speed would magically increase to 112, wouldn't it?
Well, actually, technically it would not, since I originated the call while we were already on the phone.
Okay.
So if I would have started off with no calls...
Mm-hmm.
And then we initiated this phone call afterwards. That's what would happen.
I see. Okay.
Let's see. GPO access databases are also accessible directly from GPO. Was that what we wanted to do?
Uh-huh.
Now they're like pointing us to all these university gateways.
University gateways.
Yeah, I don't know why.
No, don't go to the universities. We have to stay in the federal government.
We want them to foot the bill here.
We can't be moving on into academia.
Here we go. Advanced searches are currently supported for three databases: 1995 Federal Register.
Bingo.
1995 Congressional Record and the GAO reports.
Okay, we want the Federal Register.
Okay, let's go. Says database for the 1995 Federal Register, volume 60.
Okay.
All right. And it's presenting us with a bunch of sections that we could select to search.
Okay, what are the sections?
We have contents and preliminary pages, final rules and regulations, proposed rules, notices, presidential documents, Sunshine Act meetings.
Sunshine Act?
Yeah. Reader aids and corrections.
Okay, well, I'm going to leave you to figure out how to get today's Congressional Record, or a Federal Register, rather, or get at least the closest date that they have to now. While you're doing that, we have an update on the NETCOM situation with the Church of Scientology, and here with that is David. How you doing?
I'm doing fine. I don't think NETCOM's doing too well, because the recent custody case over the Church's allegedly copyrighted information has taken a weird turn. Justice White in California has decided that NETCOM could be a contributory defendant, so they can be sued by the church along with Dennis Ehrlich, who they're singling out as a person for putting up the information, as well as Tom Klemsrud, who runs a BBS, who also accepted some of this information and put it up on his system. The church is claiming that they had told NETCOM ahead of time that this information was copyrighted and they should have taken it off. But NETCOM is saying that this had never happened, and that is why they took no action. Ironically, both sides are claiming that it's a victory for them. Mm-hmm. The Scientologists are saying this because, you know, now no online service supposedly is going to have the guts to post any of this information or allow it to be posted. NETCOM, on the other hand, is saying that, you know, it's just totally ridiculous and that this case will bring it to light. And NETCOM...
Yeah, both sides were claiming victory. I heard NETCOM is saying this is a good thing.
Well, I don't know what NETCOM is going to say otherwise. I mean, the judge decided that, yes, this is copyrighted material, but I think the question now isn't pretty much the material in and of itself. It's the knowledge and knowing whether or not you knew that the material was copyrighted.
Right.
And NETCOM is saying that they weren't, you know, afforded such information from the church, and that the church, you know, is now saying that after the fact, you know, that you didn't take any action and we warned you. So I mean, this is a sticking point. It's pretty much like he said, she said, who's right, who's wrong.
Okay, so what kind of time are we looking at here as far as this thing going to the courts?
Well, apparently they're getting the briefs ready, and in about 3 or 4 months, I'm told that the case is going to go to court. That leaves some time for settlements. Helena Coburn, who's the legal counsel, has really been putting a number of messages up in the alt.religion.scientology news group, and I advise people who want to keep up to date on what's going on is to go over in that news group and read all the posts, in particular ones in Europe, where now in 4 countries they're trying to, I guess, defrock the church and say that Scientology is not a true religion and take away their tax-free status. What's interesting is if you read alt.religion.scientology, there are a couple of Scientologists who are trying to defend the situation. They're coming in from AOL, of all places. One of them is Andrew Milne, and what's funny is not what he's saying, but the rationales that they're trying to use, you know, that Scientology, quote-unquote, is a good thing. Because a lot of the texts that went up talked about some really bizarre thoughts about creation and this whole concept of this operating thetans, you know, from levels 1 to, I can't remember the numbers, but it's just quite bizarre.
Well, I mean, for those of us who don't really care about Scientology, does this have any meaning as far as, you know, freedom on the net, that kind of thing?
The decision is going to be really chilling if they decide that NETCOM, you know, is truly liable. Then you're going to have, well, we discussed earlier, to the nth degree, rather than just having like an S or an X, and headers on, you know, on websites. Mm-hmm. Now it's going to get to the point where these providers are going to have to filter everything that comes in, run software against, you know, anything that's uploaded. So now if somebody posts something to a news group, it may take a week to 10 days, I don't know how long, before the message finally makes it up there, because it has to get through so many filters to make sure that it isn't actionable.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how speech is causing people so much heartache. That's really all we're talking about here. Okay, thanks, David, for stopping in. With that, Fiber, do you have some information for us?
Yeah, actually, I searched for presidential documents containing the word Clinton, and the range that I chose was December 1st through today, and I came up with, here's what I came up with. The Federal Register, as of December 4th, I guess they don't have it for the current day, they have it from the previous day, since today isn't over yet. And we have Proclamation 6853 and Proclamation 6854. And the first one is National Drunk and Drugged Driving Prevention Month.
This is National Drunk and Driving Prevention Month?
Drug driving.
Drug driving?
Yeah, drunk and drugged driving.
Drunk and drugged driving.
Yeah, prevention
okay.
month.
That's
World AIDS Day in 1995.
Okay.
And,
World AIDS Day was a few days ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, apparently when they published the register, it's from stuff a couple of days ago.
Okay.
This first proclamation is from November 30th. And the National Drunk and Drug Driving Prevention Month, it says, by the President of the United States of America, a proclamation. And then it's this what reads like a speech. I could read the first paragraph.
Well, that's not necessary, but but as far as the Federal Register, I mean, are you looking at an actual copy of the Federal Register?
Yes, I am. This is text that's in the register.
And what is the date?
The date at the very top says December 4th.
So it's yesterday.
It says Volume 60, number 232, December 4th.
Okay, that's good enough for me. Now, how big is this document?
This is one particular document. Let me see if I could find...
But you get the whole Federal Register as one big lump? Is that like how it works?
No, it allows you to search it by... Mm-hmm. You enter a keyword to search for, and you choose a particular section and date. And it comes back with whatever word you chose to search for, where it found it.
Uh-huh.
And my particular search found it on pages 62,183 through 62,186.
I guess what they probably do is they probably number the Federal Register every day for the whole year.
Yeah.
You know, that's not 62,000 pages a day. That's pretty much since January 1st, I would imagine.
Yeah, that
look
makes
for
sense.
Look for the word hacker. Let's see if they've passed any any kind of... any proclamations about hackers.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Okay.
And you might look up some cuss words, too, and see, you know, how... what the president gets away with in there. Never had the opportunity to do this before. If anyone has any ideas of things we should search for, let's do it right here live on the air. We'll take some phone calls, 212-279-3400, here in country code number one. Oh, yeah, look up the word breast. that's a good one. See if anything that the Federal Register said would have been banned on AOL. Okay, you keep looking while I take the first phone call.
Okay.
Of course, there's a chance that I might disconnect you. I hope I don't. So let's see what happens here.
All right.
Oh, I didn't. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, Emmanuel.
I don't recognize your voice. Who is this?
Yes. Hey, it's me.
I'm sorry. It's not ringing a bell. Do you recognize this voice, Fiber?
No, actually, he's breaking up.
Yeah, he's breaking up.
No, it's not breaking up.
Yeah, breaking up. I'm afraid we're going to have
what?
To... All right, what do you want?
Okay, what I want is this. Don't be so rude either.
Don't be so rude either.
I'm just kidding. Anyway,
so I can be rude.
If you got my Christmas card.
Did I get your... Yeah, in fact, I did. It was sitting in the... Now, what's interesting about that card is that you sent it with no postage.
That's right. It
said returned for postage.
Right.
But the return address was here.
That's right.
The same address that you addressed it to.
Right.
So there was no place for this letter to go, except either to the return or to here, which were the same place.
Right. That's how you send free mail.
You are a genius, unknown caller.
Okay. And also, I'd like to know...
Figure that out all on your own, huh?
Did you go to the phone that says no additional dialing allowed that I told you about?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
I haven't had time to wander around the city and look for phones.
Well, 9X has these advertisements that say... with a 9X payphone, you can check your messages. But how do you check your messages when either the phone says no additional dialing allowed, or it hangs up on you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
I don't know. This
randomly hangs up on you.
That's something I'd like to get an official comment from 9X on, because they, you know, they're doing this. Obviously, we don't know how they're doing it or why, but
It's something inside this new Mars electronics device.
It might be a flaw of some sort, because it doesn't happen consistently.
Right. And I notice it only in the type of phones that mute out what they'll mute out until the dial tone comes on when you pick it up. It's only in those type of phones.
Right.
And also, what can you do with the 660 dial tone?
You've been asking that question now for a long time. Fiber, do you know the answer?
Which particular 660 dial tone are we talking about?
You mean which switch?
No, you mean the one where you dial the last 4 or 7 digits?
Well, either or. I mean, the DMF where you have to dial 660 and then your full 7-digit phone number,
right.
Or the 5ESS where you have to dial 660 and then your regular, the last 4 digits of your exchange.
Right.
Or, I think on a 1A or a 1ESS, you just dial 660 and it automatically gives
you. Yeah, there are the old-fashioned ones. On the one on the 5ESS and DMS-100, all you could really do is, at that first dial tone, is dial each touch tone in order, and you'll get a confirmation beep that all touch tones were received clear.
But can you actually make phone calls at that dial tone?
No, you cannot. Okay. On the 660 dial tone off of crossbars and ones and 1A ESSs, there were various tricks to actually place a call. On the one where you just dial 660 by itself and get a dial tone back.
Okay. Well, thanks. I think he went away, but thanks for the call anyway. Did you find anything on the
actually,
on the
I found reference to a document that's dated today that has to do with petroleum from Exxon Research, a person by the name of William Hacker.
Oh, William Hacker. Okay, well...
I don't think that's the hacker we were after.
That's not our hacker, no.
No.
Is that the only reference?
The only reference I found.
Okay. Look up Brest.
Okay,
See if there's any reference to that on the Federal Register. Let's take another phone call while you're doing that. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yes, hello, Emmanuel.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Is Fiber available for me to shout at?
Yeah, you can...
on the phone.
I might shout back, but
you're free to do that. But just some points that you made last week that didn't quite chime with me. You said, first of all, that people connecting on the Internet are expecting Unix and Windows NT wouldn't quite fit the bill, something to that effect?
As far as for running a service, an Internet service?
Okay, fine.
Yeah.
Now, I don't understand what would somebody connecting to the Internet be looking for that they can't find on Windows NT?
A prompt with a shell that allows you to type Unix commands.
Is that correct? I've FTP'd to sites and Gopher to sites that are running on Windows NT, and it's transparent to me.
Yeah, but as far as managing files and being able to make copies of files and download files, the Unix environment is a lot more suited towards that.
Well, I agree with that. Okay, but I don't see to the most end users on the Internet, I can't see... you know, what they would be deprived of. But anyway, that's splitting hairs. I don't want to press that too much. The second point is that, it's concerning ISDN service. The terminal adapter that you seem to, that you use, I believe, and that you've given a lot of good press, is one of the least hackable and most inflexible units that I've seen out there.
How do you mean?
Meaning that with the built-in network terminator, that you cannot connect any further devices than what is offered in that box.
Well, obviously this is true, but at the same time, I think that most of our listeners are looking for a one-stop solution as far as getting on the net with ISDN. And
but it should be, I think you guys, I mean, being this is a hacker show, I think, you know, it should have been made clear that because a lot of people have, I'll just mention the name, have BitSurfer terminal adapters, not the BitSurfer Pro, sitting in a corner somewhere and have to go and buy something else when that didn't fit the bill. You know, it would be nice that, it would be made clear.
Well,
you know, what
I agree, but at the same time, I don't think people that are looking to get on the... I mean, at this point in time, ISDN is new enough that people are just looking to play with it. And, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think people want to figure out at this point how to set up an NT1, how to configure an NT1, how to worry about terminating resistors and how many devices they can have on their passive bus.
Most of the NT1s out there are not that ubiquitous. I mean, they're not that crazy to deal with. And I think getting an external NT1 with a terminal adapter that's flexible and usable, I don't think it's a big deal. But we might be splitting hairs again there.
Well, the reason why I support the BitSurfer, I mean, forgetting the fact that the NT1 is built in, which is, I think, neither here nor there, the reason why I like it as a product is that it has a good combination of voice features as well as data features, which most terminal adapters, whether they have an NT1 built in or not, do not have.
I've done a lot of searching. I don't think that's the case. There's a lot of stuff out there.
Well, I've done a lot of searching myself, and I'm free to entertain any suggestions.
Okay, maybe I'll entertain this over your fax or email then.
Okay.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye.
What a rousing debate there.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, if you have more controversial things to talk about, 212-279-3400 is the number. Good evening, you're on the air. Okay, nobody there. Good evening, you're on the air.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, good evening. I'm glad that gentleman brought ISDN into the topic. I got this BitSurfer Pro. I unpacked it, and it goes out beautiful. Works fine.
Hey, you're a famous ISDN caller, aren't you?
Well, I got a real problem with this. I got the thing delivered, and it works fine. It goes out, but it won't acknowledge any incoming phone calls at all. So I looked at the configuration setup, and there are some toggles for call blocking and call ID and call screening.
Right.
Do you think it's possible that there is a toggle in there that won't even let the phone ring?
No. As is, all of those caller ID screening features are disabled.
So I might have a bad box.
It is possible.
I got a bad box the first time I got a BitSurfer. It was
bad.
Oh,
I'm so glad to hear you say that.
Oh, it happens a lot, quite actually. But what you want to do, I guess, is there a customer support number you can call?
Well, there is, but it's kind of unusual. I spend a lot of time with a lot of support phone numbers, and theirs is really the worst.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not getting any help at that end. I'm going to go ahead and... actual replacement since it just arrived within the day.
So what is the actual problem you're having?
It when you call me, it sounds like it's ringing. In other words, I call my own phone number from my cellular phone, and it sounds like it's ringing, but nothing is happening here. There is no indication. There's nothing. The phone's not ringing. And if I let it continue to ring and I pick up the receiver on the phone that I'm calling, I'm not there. It's just a dial tone. So something in the box is not acknowledging that a call is coming in.
And you've tried both voice ports, one and two?
Yeah, I've even tried disabling one or the other. And when I put the BitSurfer back on, not the BitSurfer Pro, when I replace the BitSurfer, it just works just fine.
You're getting a dial tone, yet the phone
even
is still
I'm
ringing.
Calling in, I'm hearing it ring on the cellular.
Uh-huh.
And if I pick up the phone that I'm calling, I just have the dial tone there. There's nothing coming in.
And did you check the phone number?
Yeah, I checked the SPIDs. I checked everything. Everything is exactly correct.
You dialed 958 to make sure it was the same line and all that?
Well, I'm only on one line with a cellular in my pocket. So
right.
There's no other phone to go to. So you see, in other words, I'm calling my home phone number, which is the voice side of the ISDN hookup mm-hmm. from my cellular, and it doesn't make my phone ring. So I even broke down to calling my mom and making my mother call me.
Uh-huh.
And besides the lecture on why I'm not visiting, I got no connect.
Fiber, do you think this might be a telco problem?
It could be. I mean, I've experienced this exact problem if the ISDN service was misconfigured on the switch, but he's saying that he was able to get it to work fine with a regular BitSurfer in the first place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the BitSurfer's no prior. I just snapped it. Matter of fact, the BitSurfer that I took offline and put it back in the wrap and put it away for 4 or 5 hours, I didn't even have to reconfigure it. I just fired it up, and in 20 seconds, it was already in place. and everything was working fine. I even tried to load a BitServer configuration into the BitServer Pro, but that didn't work out. It didn't accept the BitServer Pro driver. Hmm. It came up with a warning about.
Oh, you're actually using the with the Windows configuration software?
Well, I'm using the configuration software that came with the BitServer Pro, and the separate software that came with the BitServer.
Yeah.
But when you go to use to set up the dialing in your dialing network in 95, and you go to make your new connection, ultimately you have to use their configuration setup.
Well, the only thing I would suggest is, since obviously that configuration software is fairly new, I wouldn't trust it 100%. I would, you know, that there's a menu feature built into the BitServer on the Pro.
Right. I have to go to a VT100 emulator.
Yeah. If you're using Windows 95,
pardon?
You can use the HyperAccess Lite that comes with Windows.
I haven't installed it. No.
Oh, okay. Well, if you could just get your hands on a simple terminal program with VT100.
Yeah. Well, I was going to use it out of Comet.
Yeah.
I think that has it in there.
Yeah.
And what do you suggest?
I suggest going into, it's AT followed by the at symbol and the word menu.
Right.
I would suggest going into there. It's really simple to configure. You move around with the arrow keys.
Sure, I've been there before with the BitServer.
Okay. The thing that you want to double check is under network, or I believe might be called net switch.
Right.
Is the particular option depending on the software revision. And I would just double check in there that the SPIDs and the directory numbers were in fact set as you entered them.
Right.
Because it sounds like they may not have been set properly when you were using the front end software.
Well, the only indication the book gives to anything like this is that they suggest that in such a situation you might be on 5ESS when you belong on national and triple check that. So I did, but I'll take your advice and go through and look in the menu.
Yeah, if there's still a problem, call us back and let us know.
Yeah, keep us updated.
Yeah, thank you very much, and thank you very much for being there. I suggest you do a show on the anxiety involved with computing in general and the effects that it has on us all.
We could do a permanent series on that, but we'll definitely take it into consideration. Thanks for calling.
Thank you very much. Good night.
Farber, do you think everybody who has a BitServer, do you think a lot of people have BitServers out there, or do you think everyone who has one is calling us? Because everyone seems to have one these days.
Well, they did fare up to be one of the more popular terminal adapters. The thing that obviously everyone is upset about is everyone wanted to jump on the ISDN bandwagon early, and Motorola ended up coming out with the BitServer Pro, which is obviously superior, mm-hmm. and didn't really offer any sort of upgrade path.
That's true. Yeah, I'm one of those victims, in fact. I was more pushed onto the bandwagon, but I'm on it nonetheless. And I have a regular BitServer, and that's how we're connecting 2600.com at 56K to the net. I have no real complaints. I mean, it does work. And, you know, with 9X line quality, we wouldn't be able to get two lines going at once anyway. I think we have the only decent line out there. So
we should probably add to those listeners that are out in Long Island might be, if they haven't already, and if they're thinking of getting ISDN, they might run into some difficulties in actually doing data over a voice call because of the quality of the analog trunks in much of Long Island.
From one location to another, not necessarily in all locations.
Yeah.
And I don't think if you went within your CO, you would have a problem at all, right?
Right. It seems to be that the problem exists between some of the COs in Long Island.
Right. Hopefully that'll get rectified at some point. Have you heard anything new on the rumor about 9X dropping the penny a minute charge?
No, I'm still attempting to find out information about that. At this point in time, I've asked a number of people, and at this point in time, it still seems to be just that, a rumor.
Okay. All right, if anybody hears any more on that or has anything in writing, please get it to us one way or another. Let's take another phone call. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook. Good evening. You're on Off the Hook.
Yes. Good evening. I have two questions. One of them I called last week or 2 weeks ago about my phone service and having fun with having static on the line. And, of course, say it doesn't sound too bad, thank heavens, but I'm still getting dropped and having problems connecting, and I have a feeling it's the office equipment, and I was wondering if I could pick your brains for a minute. you and Fiber. And so basically, it seems that it doesn't really have static until it connects to the other phone line. And so, you know, if it's, you know, connecting through the network and dialing and ringing, it doesn't really seem bad. But once the other person picks up, it seems to have static. Is there some sort of situation in each switch that would be caused by? Or?
Well, is this happening when you call various different people, or is it always the same people?
I guess I tend to call the same people, but it seems to happen. There seems to be some sort of variety, because if you call somebody like at the CO or like someone who works for 9X, it doesn't really seem to be that bad. But you know, but it seems to be with just about everybody.
Hmm. Well, it's not with us. Sounds fine.
Yeah, we're not hearing it now.
Beautiful connection.
Well, good.
Let's listen to the non-static. Beautiful. No problems there at all.
Why don't you refresh your memory? Have you reported this to the Repair Service Bureau?
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
I haven't really gone into it in depth with the all. Thank heavens, you guys would be, you know,
well,
bored.
Next time they call you and ask you if you're still having the problem, lie and say that you are having the problem. That way they have to come out and then confront you face-to-face when you don't have a problem. Or maybe you will have a problem when they come out there.
Yeah, I've had them come out, six times now or something like that.
Have you actually called a number with the static while you had someone there from 9X?
I haven't had them be able to hear the static when they're here, which is really the most annoying thing. Sometimes I call 611 and they'll hear the static, and sometimes they don't.
Well, what do the people at 611 say when they hear it?
So, like, sometimes they'll say, wow, yeah, I can hear the static, and sometimes they're like, oh, check's fine, so...
I don't know. It's pretty strange. But as we suggested last week, what you should do is get to the point where the phone line actually comes into the house and take it from there.
Yeah.
And, you know, then it's definitely a 9X problem if you're still getting it at that point.
It's most definitely a 9X problem.
And the thing I don't understand is if you call 611, they have it in their power to test the line right there on the spot.
Yeah,
right?
And they often say it tests clear. Sometimes they say it doesn't. You know, it's...
So the fact that they say it doesn't, then they should be opening a trouble report.
Right.
Well, they are. They're definitely taking care of it, and, you know, they keep coming, thank heavens. But
nothing's getting resolved.
I have a feeling it's in the office equipment, and it's just like, you know, I don't know how the heck I'm going to get them, convince them to do anything about it. I mean, they said they were going to this past weekend, and they did.
Hmm.
You know, and I was trying to see if I could pinpoint something that it might be in the office equipment that I could say, oh, try this or something, but I don't know.
Have you tried raising the problem to the infamous president's helpline?
No, I haven't really gone there yet. But
well, you should actually consider that. It seems like you're on the right track as far as what the problem is. You've got enough people at 9X to acknowledge that there is, in fact, a problem,
mm-hmm.
and they're just being lax about doing something about it. I think you should raise a formal complaint.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, actually, probably what I'm going to try to do is to sit down and make a log of every phone call I make and the status of it and see if there's some sort of pattern.
Yeah. Also... You know, try different phones, obviously. I imagine
you've
already done that.
Yeah, I've rewired the house, I've tried different phones, and mm-hmm. that isn't it either, unfortunately.
Okay.
Well, I mean, if they've actually gave me a whole new terminal in the back, they, you know, carried me over to another building and, you know, rewired, you know, my block pair, and it was very, you know, they've done a lot around here. It's just, it wasn't solved.
Okay,
anyway,
well, let us know if something changes then.
Yeah, the other question is, I'm hoping I'm going to be getting a slip in the near future, and, I was wondering, do you know of a site to grab a windsock application?
What particular?
Oh, I don't care. Just get me going.
You mean just to grab some general stuff?
Yeah, I just want to, you know, get my slip connection going on my Windows machine.
Okay. Well, actually, are you getting slip or PPP?
Slip
is kind of dated by today's standards.
What's that?
Slip is rather dated by today's standards. Uh-huh. It isn't really used much anymore.
Well, what do I know?
But, well, let's assume you are getting a PPP connection.
Okay.
Either way. Just off the top of my head, you can try anonymous FTPing to a local site, internet channel. You just FTP to inch.com.
Inch.com?
Yeah, and
okay.
They have, for both Macs and PCs, they
Beautiful.
Have a collection of typical tools used.
All right. That's
okay.
Nice.
All right.
Thank
Thanks
you.
For calling. Good evening. You're on BAI.
Yes, me again.
Good evening. You're on BAI.
Hi. I'm wondering if you could help me out here. I call MCI to sign up with them, and they asked me for my social.
And I got real indignant about giving my social security number to a phone company.
Mm-hmm.
And they connected me to the big guy robot in MCI. And he said that that was because an FCC third-party confirmation, something to that effect. And I was wondering if you guys had ever heard of it, number one. And number two, if they get that data, what do you think they do with it? Do they do anything else, like sort it? Or
That's a good question. What do they do with the data? They just wanted your SSN.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they could just use it within their own agencies that they have.
They assured me that it wouldn't come out, but of course that's what they're going to do.
Things change. You know, once they have that number, they say they're not going to give it to anybody now, and they might just use it for internal filing, but, you know, 10 years from now, they still have that number. Who knows? There might be some sort of new presidential proclamation issued on the net, and they might have to give that information out to everybody that requests it. Basically, if you feel they don't have the need to have your social security number, don't give it to them. Give them 10 random, 9 random digits then, see if that works. And if all of a sudden they say, hey, that doesn't match your name, you know, they're looking you up somewhere. But just as long as you remember what those 9 digits are, then, you know, make them happy, give them 9 random numbers.
Well, isn't there that range of unused Social Security numbers that they always use for samples?
Yeah, for TV programs and all that. I don't know exactly where it is, but I can find out.
Yeah, I don't remember what that range is either, but at least if you gave something like that, it has the appearance of realness.
Right.
So then I guess 000.
Well, I think if you start off with a bunch of zeros, they might catch on.
Okay.
They're intelligent people there.
Alrighty.
All right, good
luck.
Thank
you.
Sure.
Bye.
I think it's good when people ask those kind of questions, you know.
Yeah.
That's my goal, is to have people, you know, whenever they're asked for a social security number, a credit card number, a password, or anything, even their phone number, you know, they should ask themselves first.
Well, I know at least the 9X's rationale behind asking that for new orders, for a new line to be put in.
Right.
Is that they were being ripped off left and right by telemarketing fraudsters who would set up hot shops.
Mm-hmm.
Get a bunch of phone lines installed and then just vanish, and all the bills would.
What I don't understand about that is, don't the people have to be in a place, like, you know, a place that they're either renting or own or live in?
Right.
And isn't that a way to find out who somebody really is?
Well, no. I'm talking about, say, renting a space on a floor, say, in an apartment building.
Okay.
And having, say, 10 lines put in.
Right, but you can't just rent an apartment without having some sort of background check done on you. In most places, anyway, they ask for a bank account or something, you know, so they can see if you're going to be a good tenant.
Well, I'm certainly not a telemarketing fraudster or know too much about it, but obviously it does not pose that much of a problem, or else it wouldn't be happening as much.
Well, I know one of the things that 9X has done is they've imposed limits, which I think is more reasonable. Say $100, maybe $200 for the first month to see if you're going to pay up, you know, when your bill comes in. Of course, you can always use long-distance companies. There's no way to really stop you from doing that. But, you know, this seems like a problem that always has existed.
Right.
I don't see it as something new. So I don't understand why suddenly we need to give out more information.
Well, plus, a Social Security number is not exactly secret. You can request anyone's credit history,
mm-hmm.
and that sure enough is going to have their Social Security number in it.
That is true. Okay, I think we're out of time. I'm not sure because the clocks are telling two different, totally different times here, but I'm going to err on the side of caution and say that we're out of time for now. This has been Off the Hook. We'll be back again next week. Also, just to update people on a couple of things, we said Bernie S. was going to have a hearing next week, or actually last week, and in fact that has been postponed again for 2 more weeks. So it won't be this Friday coming up. It'll be the Friday after that where he'll have a hearing to determine if he has to go back to prison. And the second thing we want to update people on is our net... Our net accessibility for this radio show. Yes, we are going to be putting some more shows on our FTP site right now. You can download an edition of Off the Hook from a few weeks ago, and I think by the end of the week we'll have about 3 more shows on there that you can download and play through your Sound Blaster. We also have a program now up there that will play the program in MS-DOS. So if you just want to download it and play it immediately and you have a Sound Blaster and it's configured and all that, then you can... Right now, FTP to 2600.com, log in as anonymous, and download that from the...
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off. questions.